this show always starts recording late, but the one day we're on time. No, no, can't do
no,
shit.
No, we got 2 minutes. We have 2 minutes until we're on time. So just hang back. Let the German be German.
Oh.
So.
Did you know Utah now has the most call centers per city per capita in the nation, in Utah, in the U.S.? And that is, and I'm told that is because we have the most legible accent. We are the most universal accent that anybody can understand easily.
I thought that was because Utah doesn't have to do anything else.
Oh, we got lots to do. We are actually, at first I was kind of like thinking it was just kind of a dumb, like, oh, they're trying something. But no, we are actually kind of becoming like the second Silicon Valley. Adobe's popped up here. A whole bunch of like broadband fiber internet people are popping up here. It's kind of turning into a thing.
Oh.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the Phoenix area as well, with all the tech companies popping in. It's nice to see them branch out of Silicon Valley and spread the love around a little bit.
Is Adobe Mormon brand now?
No.
No. Oh, God, no. No, no, no. There's a reason when they pop up in Utah, they're popping up in Salt Lake City, not Mormon land.
Actually, no, they're a little bit south of Salt Lake City. They are in what is called Spanish Fork, which is in the border of Salt Lake City and Mormonlandia when things start to get a little bit weird.
The thing is, big companies mostly settle in near to smaller villages because, first of all, it's cheaper there to build there. And secondly, they kind of increase the economy of the small towns there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Spanish Fork used to be just kind of a podunk little thing. Now all these towns that are nearby, they're developing, they're getting big. They're like there's this one town just a little bit south of me called Harriman. And probably not even 10 years ago, there were maybe 10 houses there housing like 20 people. Really not a lot. It was just this little tiny know-nothing town. And now it's got subdivisions. It's got like whole shopping centers. And it just popped up. It's now on the map. And it's probably 20 minutes away from the Adobe headquarters here in Utah.
Yep. And in terms of, you know, why Utah, accent wise, yeah, I can see why the accent would be appealing because you're almost Midwesterner. But another thing is wages.
So what have you guys been up to this week?
Well, let's see. This past week, I have been very, very busy dealing with IT related service calls, given that that's what I do for a living. And the highlight of my week, I shit you not, was going to install America Online.
For a 60-year-old woman?
Close. 50s, but yes.
Okay, no excuse. She should remember how bad it was.
No, she's a diehard fan. And to get you an idea, America Online's desktop client is no longer free. They want you to pay like $8 a month for it.
What?
And they've gutted it to the point that when you load it now, it literally loads just a skin of basically Internet Explorer, and all the buttons link to web pages for the most part.
That's what it is.
But you
before.
Still got to pay. No, before there actually was more software, it would actually pull things from the server and load it using its client. Now it was just literally extracting things like a web page. So it loads instantaneously. And I think they're actually using this as sort of a stepping stone to eventually get rid of the desktop client. But man, are they going to milk people to the very end?
It's only taken them 20 years.
Yeah. And aside from that, I've been doing some spring cleaning in my nest.
Do you remember when AOL and like other dial-up companies would lock you out of Internet Explorer and you could only use their Internet Exploring tool to get online, their browser?
Yeah, that was the late 90s.
Yeah.
That was the late 90s, and then they got sued. And they stopped.
That was so stupid.
Yeah, but it wasn't just AOL doing that. But yeah, AOL, at one time when they were the shit, controlled everything and ramrodded you to use the AOL experience. And admittedly, you know, when I was growing up, AOL was the shit to me because you had, you know, the chat rooms, the message boards, you know, you've got mail, all that stuff. For its time, it was pretty cool, but its time was a long time ago.
I think even like 8-year-old Core would disagree.
Well, that's because 8-year-old Core didn't like parental controls, but that's a different conversation.
Really browse the internet that much. It was more of connecting for video games and stuff, you know.
Yeah. AOL games, my first gaming experience, aside from, you know, console games with Nintendo, my first PC gaming experience was going to AOL Games message board and downloading their little games.
Literally. Oh my god, I remember those.
They had 3 megabyte, 5 megabyte, 10 megabyte games, and they were fun. They everything and anything you could imagine you could download. It was pretty cool.
The thing where you could draw together, that was fun.
I remember that. Yep.
I remember my first like chat experience online was ICQ.
Yep, it still exists.
Yes, it does.
ICQ, yeah. MSN Messenger. Oh my god.
Yeah, that one was really good for like just talking with friends and people you knew, though, because you had your little passcode you could give them.
Yes, and you could make your own emoticons. And
right.
It was really fun to do stuff with MSN. They had like also something where you could draw tiny pics and send it to others as a feature.
I remember that too.
And then they merged it with Skype, and that was their mistake.
And then they made Skype the de facto go to for everything, and so you've got to deal with Skype. The problem with Skype is it's Skype. The reason why Skype is successful is, well, it's Skype. So it's good and bad.
Skype was successful before Microsoft took it over, and that's kind of what's held their reputation for long enough.
Yeah, and then the quality dropped.
I remember before I had a cell phone, I had a PDA and a Skype phone number, and that was how I used it. I just hopped on Wi-Fis.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, Skype has gotten better because Microsoft figured out, especially ever since Telegram came to the scene, that, maybe we should take some of the bloat out of it. And so it actually, the latest version of Skype actually loads very quick and is relatively stable. It's amazing what happens when you have competition.
Right? But, I think Discord's actually provided most of the competition for Skype in that aspect.
Yes. I'd say Discord is better by far.
For a long, long time, back when people were finally starting to abandon the traditional AIM MSN style instant messengers and go for a universal platform, Skype was it for the furries for a little while there before, you know.
Yeah.
And from my experience, from before Telegram really just boom. Yeah. I mean, Skype was, and let me tell you, Skype, there's one thing Skype is shit at. It's text communication. It just sucks at text communication. It was so laggy. Oh my God.
It was skinned to death, basically. Mm-hmm. So this has been a fun nostalgia trip back over the past 10 years of app development.
Yeah. And the highlight of my week was not even that. The highlight of my week was cleaning my nest, I should say. And my bedroom alone, I took out, because I was downsizing and such, I took out 7 bags of trash and 2 bags of clothing I'm going to donate to Goodwill and charity.
All right, well, this is episode 62 of Bird Life. I'm Core.
Yay! I'm Fleeks.
I am the one Storm that chirps in the night.
He's Storm.
Arika Hawk speaks pointed up with pride, we cry. Horizon ahead, wings spread out, we claim the sky. Badinia, Badinia, glory to Badania, forever free Badania. Badania, Badania, a glory to Badania. Badania, Badania, forever free Badania.
Always be beeping.
He's actually.
Why the hell would you interrupt? I've got my.
Because you took 5 seconds to come up with something.
Bitch, I was ready to rock and roll. Okay, no, you didn't give me a time to let my
second delay there.
5 seconds, my ass.
Yeah, and today we are talking about board games and tabletop games.
We are talking about board games and tabletop games.
Yes, we're talking about the things nerds do when they get together and decide we need to pass time.
And or it's a bonding experience for all. Because we enjoy it.
Yeah,
Because that's our social life. Because we don't go to clubs. Because we don't do drugs. Because we're not into sports.
Excuse me. I'll tell you right now, I know plenty of people that do drugs and still take tabletop games. And you sometimes need to get high just to get through some of them fucking tabletop games because they will make your blood pressure go through the roof.
If your DM is doing a shitty job, you need a coping mechanism of some sort.
Yep.
So what are your guys' favorite board games or tabletop games?
Wait. I would suggest we start from worst to best.
Of what?
Let's start with the best, and do the best first, and then the worst.
Yeah, or so our favorite.
Because I can do a ranking. I can really do a ranking. And my favorite one is... it depends, actually. One of the games I had a lot of fun with was Secret Hitler.
That is actually a lot of fun. I love Secret Hitler.
Secret Hitler is really, really, really a good game.
Okay, I never heard of it.
It's practically like werewolves, but one of you is Hitler and a few of you are fascists, and the other ones are liberals. The liberals...
Storm, have you ever played, Investigator? So you have the investigator, you have the murderer, and then, like, as you're investigating, people are getting murdered, and you have to figure out who it is before it's just you two left? And sometimes you might murder the investigator, and then it's just game over?
Yeah, I've done that, but I'm just surprised that that's allowed in Germany, given how... you know, very, very protective they are of distancing themselves from that time period.
I don't see any reason why it would be disallowed. I mean, it's kind of something to own up to your history.
Me neither, but I think there actually is no German translation of this game. So I'm not sure if it's actually allowed here. But people bring it to furry cons, and that's where I play it. So... And I don't think it's illegal because it's obviously it's not really supporting any Nazi stuff, and Secret it doesn't contain any Nazi symbolics.
Oh God! It sounds like an interesting game, and it sounds like the kind of game that would be fun to do while you're having a drink at a furry pond. It really does.
Also, I was at a Swedish furry con playing it, and I was the only German, and everybody was always like. Yeah, he's German. They always made that very obvious joke, yeah.
Yep.
But I was always liberal. I was always liberal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you guys... See, the reason why I asked my earlier question is I can name what my least favorite and most favorite game is right now with the same game. Are you ready?
Sure.
No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
Okay, we'll give you 5 minutes. Sure. We'll come back to it. I'll talk about mine in the meantime.
Okay. It's Monopoly. That game will single-handedly end friendships, destroy families, and show you how to be a heartless capitalistic cunt. And for that reason, I absolutely love it and hate it at the same time. I have won every battle, every game I've played Monopoly, I ended up winning, which is interesting. But with that being said, it was a six-hour-long battle, and yeah.
So, lots of backstabbing. That's actually what kind of kills Monopoly for me, is because it is like, it can be a 4 to 6 hour game if it develops that far. And once you're 3 hours, like 2 to 3 hours in, you kind of already know who's going to win, and it's really difficult to pull that victory away from them. So that's what kills it for me, is because it just becomes this slow, agonizing defeat.
For me,
the first 2 hours, it is fun because you're all trying to get to the point where you're like, you know, this awesome capitalist, like, god of the board. And then you just kind of fades away.
Yeah, see, that's never happened for me. Every game of Monopoly I've played, you didn't know who was going to win until the very end. Usually you'd figure out who's going to be like the top two contenders about 2 hours in.
Right.
But it was a battle to the finish. And more often than not, I was the underdog, looking like I was about to go bankrupt in one roll. And next thing I know, I am just absolutely sacking it to the guy that's on top, and I end up winning. It's fantastic, but it's awful at the same time.
Ah.
And that's why, for me, it's very much one of those games you admire from a distance, and you only play with true friends otherwise.
My problem is too, it's too long. And the other hand, I'm always that guy that somehow manages to roll three doubles in a row. I don't know what is happening, but I'm always ending up in jail. So
the German ends up in jail. Oh, but I just figured out last week regarding Monopoly that 95% of the world apparently doesn't actually play Monopoly right, myself included. And if you actually follow the rule book to the letter, to the absolute fucking letter, with every T and every I read correctly, the game actually goes pretty fast. It's just, when you play the traditional way everyone knows how to play from growing up, it takes forever. It's a very vicious game if you play through the rule book, but very fast paced.
Okay, so Monopoly, love and hate at the same time. Fleeks, how about you?
Huh? What about me?
Well, what is your favorite and then least favorite game?
Oh, I already said, like, okay, I think besides Secret Hitler, what is a good game? I think I really like Taboo. Taboo is not really a board game, I would
like
say.
Like the one with the buzzer?
The one with the words. Where you have to.
The one I played had like a buzzer that came with it that you would use.
It has a buzzer. It has a buzzer, but not all editions. So, you have to explain a word without the usage of some other words. And if you accidentally use one of those words, you get buzzed, right?
Ah.
And I really liked it to create. Explain words, and then there is another game that I really like, is where you have a card. Somebody has to explain a drawing. He has a drawing on a card, and he has to explain what he sees on it, and the other ones have to draw it.
And
afterwards, there's a ranking system where, for example, he had to explain a clone who holds a ball in the air. Yeah, into the air. And then there is a critique on the card that says, the drawing holds a ball into the air. And then the one who explained gets points for it. So he has to explain it as good as possible. But he doesn't know. He doesn't know what the critics are, you know?
So that kind of reminds me of a fun game to play. Have either of you heard of 1,000 blank white cards?
No.
Oh,
tell me more.
Where you have to make your own game out of cards.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so 1,000 blank white cards, what it is you have literally, you know, probably not 1,000, but, you know, a few hundred blank white cards, and then you spend 10 minutes. So you have a setup phase where you spend 10 minutes drawing out 10 cards, and each card has to have a title, a picture, and then an effect. And that effect can be anything from as simple as give yourself 1,000 points, or it could be eat this card, and then give yourself 1,000 points, or give it to someone else and lose 1,000 points.
Or for example, if you have 1,000 points. Then you lose 2,000 points. If you have over 1,000 points, you lose 2,000 points, right?
Correct. So you make up the rules as you go along, and you do what the cards say. So last time my friends and I played this, there was one card that was a flip-off core for 100 points. So everybody at the table flipped off. And then I couldn't quite wrangle my own finger around and flip myself off, so I did not get 100 points.
Oh, you can't hold up your finger in front of you and flip yourself off. Come on. That is some bullshit. Everyone needs to flip themselves off once in a while. It really boosts the soul.
But that is a seriously fun game that, like, all you have to do is go to the store and buy, like, a whole bunch of, like, little, what are they called? The ones you use for memorization.
Memory cards.
Yeah, just buy a whole bunch of those cards, and then you just make them up. It's fun. And then what you do at the end of the game, so officially the end of the game is whoever has the most points. If you draw a card that has, like, you give yourself 1 million points and end the game or something like that, then it's over and you're done. Again, the rules are made up on the card, so you can do anything you want. Mm. But at the end of the game, you kind of do a little keep or toss. Like, so everybody hands in their cards, and then you decide keep, toss, toss. And, like, you try to keep as many cards as you can, because the next time you play, you're gonna draw 10 new cards, and then you're going to add your old stack into it as well.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's basically, next thing you know, if you do a few rounds of this, you've got an entirely made-up stack of cards that is just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And I think the basic rules are that you just make turns. Like, you're starting off with making turns clockwise. Like, but it can change with the cards, right?
Right.
I imagine if it's a free-for-all in a way.
So we had one card that was, you lose this game and end up with negative 1 million points if this card is in your hand at the end of the game. Slip this card into someone else's hand.
So you would
try to slip it into, like, your neighbor's hand. I think it also had the effect of if they catch you, lose 100 points.
How the hell did... That can get creative.
Yes, it's that can crazy get real creative.
More people that should be played on cons. Androcon, yeah. We are playing that at Androcon.
Okay,
if you're coming.
Yeah.
That sounds like a blast. For those that don't know, the Three Beaks, we're going to get together here and try to do a little something at AC. It'll be the first time we've ever been together in person. And, oh, my God, the squawks that are going to happen
from
that.
It's going to be a little insane.
Yeah, I also I also tried to do a call and draw with Adler. But, yeah, more at the end.
So
more at the end.
My favorite game is, maybe you've heard of it, Smash Up. Yes? No? Nope. Maybe so?
No, I haven't heard that.
Okay. So what it is, it's kind of a basic card game where, I don't even really know how to describe it, but you have these faction sets. So one faction might be Bear Cavalry, and then you'll have another faction that is Pretty Pretty Princess, and then you have another faction that is Time Travelers. And there's a ton of different sets. You take two of those sets and you shuffle them together. So you might have time traveling bears versus plant dinosaurs. And you basically try to take over the world with your hybridized monsters. And each set kind of has its own, like, special, like, tactic to it. So, like, bears are kind of a very brute force creature. Like, so all of your attacks with them, they're going to be hard-hitting and very straightforward. Meanwhile, if you have another one that's like plants don't really do a whole lot of damage, but they're really good at setting their roots into one of the places you're trying to take over. And anytime someone comes in and takes you out, your plant regrows. So it's hard to get rid of the plants. So you smash these two factions together to create this like hybridized scheme and basically try to take over the world with it. It is a ton of fun. As for least favorite games, I don't know that I have a particular least favorite right now.
Whoa. Are you sure about that, considering you mentioned a certain card game during the planning stages of this episode?
Am I sure that Smash Up is my favorite game?
No. A certain card game that was your least favorite that was going to drive you nuts.
No. You're thinking about Magic, and that's a whole other thing. And no, I don't hate Magic. I've gotten freaking addicted to it.
Okay. I didn't say you had to hate it, but it drives you nuts in some ways, apparently.
No, so it doesn't drive me nuts.
Yeah, I think...
The hype was that I'm going to talk about it this entire episode. That was what it was about. Not that it bothered me.
Oh, see, I got the impression like, oh, Core's got some tension he's about to unload on this. This ought to be fucking good. I was going to put my feet up and go like, ah, this is going to be good. Let's just sit back and let him go.
So what I was going to say my least favorite game is probably at this point Cards Against Humanity. And that's only because I've played it so damn much that it's just the same thing over and over again. It's a fun game. Don't get me wrong.
But it
is so basic and it becomes so repetitive that once you've played it 100 times, you're just kind of like, please, can we do something with a little bit more brain power in it?
Actually, I still have fun playing the custom Broad Crew deck.
Yeah, we haven't done Cards Against Humanity online for a little while. That would be fun.
Yeah, we did it like 2 weeks ago, I think.
I'd like to get in on one of those. That would be a lot of fun. Yeah, that's figures. I'm never around when y'all do that kind of stuff. So it's like, why can't this happen to me? Anyways.
Because you always work.
When I play Cards Against Humanity at a FurCon or at a party with friends, we only do about two rounds, and then we move on to something else. But it's a very fun two rounds.
Because like every meet that I go to, someone's like, I brought Cards Against Humanity, and everyone's like, yay! And then they play it for 4 hours, and you're just like, please, do you guys want to like maybe socialize a little bit instead of just hide behind these cards? Nope, they want to play cards.
Yeah, not me.
I think you can play it for an hour and then you're getting like, let's do something else.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Fix.
My least favorite game is Mensch, ärgere dich nicht, Acker. I think it's Parcheesi in American.
Okay.
It's also called Ludo, I think.
We'll just pretend we know. Continue.
Yeah. Give me a second. I'll show you the board and you know it for sure. Because it's one of the classic games.
I don't have a clucking clue, but I'm pretending.
No, I've heard of Parcheesi. I don't know what it is because I don't think I've ever played it.
I show you what it is. I post a picture in. And it's processing, and there it is.
Yeah, it's like it's a really old game, and I know the name of it, but I've never played it.
It's freaking annoying and boring.
Hang on, no, I do think I know what this is. You try to make it around the board, and then when you get back to your color, you go up that middle row, and the first person to finish their middle row wins. And at the very end, when you're trying to make it up that middle row, you have to roll the die number that it is.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
You have to
roll. Storm, that, you remember
and you can
pop-up?
Kick at us.
Do you remember the pop-up game where you would have that bubble in the middle with the dice in it? You'd have to pop it and it would land?
Yes.
It's that, except you don't have the pop-up thing in the middle. You just roll die.
Yes. And
I didn't even like the pop-up version very much.
Yeah, it's a classic game, and it was one of the first games humanity knew, probably. I don't know. Besides chess and stuff.
Besides drinking.
Oh my god, no. I really, 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 really don't like this game. It is no fun, and it gets even less fun when you get kicked all the time and you can make it and it takes way too long. And
Parcheesi or what?
Pachisi, yes.
Okay.
It's just no fun. It's no fun.
Okay, we get it. You don't like it. Jeez, calm down, man. What was your favorite? Oh, you said Secret Hitler like 3 times.
And I said Taboo, and I said this one drawing game.
Your choice in games is like a little bit like, I guess, for lack of a better word, like flat. They're not like out there off the wall kind of like some games can be. So that's why it kind of catches me by surprise.
The thing is, I like communicative social games, like where you have to interact and talk to each other and not only roll dice and stuff. That's
magic.
My thing.
Sorry.
Like Magic. I never played Magic because I tried as a kid, but it was too complicated for me.
It's going to be way too complicated. I mean, there are some like 8 and 9 year olds who got a grasp of it that come to the tournament nights that we play at, like their parents bring them. But even then, they're just kind of like, yeah, I'm just here because like I put this deck together and I'm going to kick your butt. And then you end up kicking their butt even though you're trying to let them win. And then they're just sad.
Yeah. I played Yu-Gi-Oh.
Fucking Yu-Gi-Oh.
Blue eyes, it was fun.
Dragon,
come on, it
red
was
eyes, it. Black dragon bullshit.
Hey, it was fun. I can't lie.
Do you guys know how big the Pokemon game, like the trading card game and like tournament battles are?
Yes.
They're still huge. They are still like the biggest thing for people our age and younger. Like I wouldn't be surprised if Pokemon actually kind of outclassed Magic.
I own a first edition card.
Drizzle's really gotten into that, but he plays the electronic handheld game.
Well, that's not the card game. That's not what I'm talking about.
No, listen. Okay, but listen. A lot of those tournaments, they have both running concurrently at the same time. They'll have a section for the electronic players and a section for the card game players. But the card game players dominate 95% of the space.
Probably, yeah.
And it was incredible how many of these people still show up.
And then I have played, like, Pokemon, you know, the electronic version. Like, what was it? X and Y. I was really into doing competitive. Me and a friend, we had our competitive teams, and we would go to tournaments and still get our butts kicked by everybody else. But yeah, that was kind of a thing that we got into really hardcore. We were researching like, you know, good Pokemon combos to have, what to do when you have them out. Like Smogon University is a resource website for kind of studying tournaments and stuff like that, so you can figure stuff out. We would spend hours just researching on like Smogon University just for these tournaments.
I have a first edition card of Pokemon, of the first edition, a shiny one, that nice. Is normally, that's worth, like, I should you not, 400 euro at least.
Wow.
But it is not in mint condition. It has a scratch. And that's so freaking frustrating, you know. I could make like 400 euros, but I can sell it for the price because it has a tiny scratch.
I don't think it probably won't go. Like, you'll still get a good portion of that money.
Yeah,
have like all of my original Pokemon cards like down in my basement somewhere.
You're rich, probably.
Probably not, because when I was stupid, I traded off all of my like really good cards for mass amounts of like mediocre cards.
But if you find a shiny Glurak, so a shiny card, not literally
right.
a shiny Glurak.
Yeah, the Hall of Foil ones, yeah.
First edition, you're rich. You're free.
I have
rich,
a bunch of first edition stuff. That's the thing. They might have a little bit of price on them still.
Yes.
Most of what it is, though, is like I would get a Charizard, for example, which back when it first came out, that was like the most coveted card. Aside from a Mew, which you could only get for when you went and saw Pokemon the first movie.
I have this one too, yes.
That one's actually a little more common and not hard to get a hold of anymore. But So, like, I would have these original Charizards, which are currently worth a bit more money than they used to be. But I would sell them. Like, I wouldn't sell them, but I'd trade them for, like, 50 cards that, you know, were just kind of a mediocre thing so that I would just have an expansive library.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things I like to see at a lot of bars is people
magic?
That go to bars is gigantic Jenga. Huge Jenga that the whole bar's got to get involved in. And what some of these bars do is they make it some like a silly contest, and whoever causes the Jenga to collapse has to buy everyone a round or an appetizer or something. And it gets to be very competitive, and people are getting nervous because they don't want to pay for the 60 whiskey shots
The
people in there. And it's just, it's great fun. And I mean, a lot of bars do this now, and sometimes it's foam blocks. Sometimes it's actually actual wooden blocks that are just big. It's really cool.
That was only kind of just starting to come around by the time I stopped working at the bar I was in. So we never got the Jenga blocks, but I did see like other bars starting to do that. And yeah, that is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I kind of like to play is Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, it's Trivial Pursuit, yes.
Yeah, Trivial Pursuit.
Fleeks, you're like just stuck in the 80s, man. These are all games that were popular in the 80s and 90s.
Now that you mention it, I have only the family edition from the 90s.
Aww.
That means the questions are still kind of old, and they're still talking about stuff that's not a thing anymore.
Right.
And some questions are not valid anymore, just like that. That's just
now. What you need to do is you need to take that game and you need to play it with someone who's like 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean, some countries are still existing in that thing that are not existing anymore, or not like this at least.
Constantinople?
Our ritual was, because it's pretty often the right answer, to any history question, if you don't know the answer, you just say Bismarck. Because Bismarck is probably right. That's a tradition, yeah.
So, what is a good memory you have at a con or a Fermeet or, you know, something within the fandom of just kind of sitting down and playing games with people?
Games Corner are so great on cons, I tell you. Game Corners, I learned about so many games in the Games Corner, and often they have like a lead that are doing them, that are responsible for those game corners, that are super huge board game nerds, and they have games you never saw before, and that are so much fun. Oh my god. Like Exploding Kitten. I learned about Exploding Kittens.
Go ahead, Quakes. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, that was a great game, or Kittens in the Blender. And something like that were games I will never forget.
Right.
Yeah, I'm finished.
I know that this isn't a traditional board game, but when I'm at cons, the game that seems to be incredibly popular every con I've gone to for years now is Werewolf. But aside from playing that,
Secret Hitler,
I really don't. I'm sorry to say this, guys. I really don't play board games at cons that much. There's so many people I want to meet.
You spent most of it up in your bedroom boffing people.
Oh, totally. You know, I got to get my nuts off at least every 2 hours. But aside from that fact, I by the time you try meeting all your friends and going for a drink or going to, you know, get some noms, I don't have a lot of time. It's just too much time in one place. But that's my opinion on it. Some people love it, and I'm all for them having fun. It's a blast. I've done it a couple of times. I just don't do it much.
I kind of really ran out of energy at BLFC, like, by the end of the first day on its own. Because it is kind of a big aspect of running around, meeting people, going and doing this, that, and the other thing. And like you'd get a message from someone saying, "Hey, you're here. You should come join us. Do this." You'd be like, "Okay, I'll be over there in a moment." You'd run all the way over there to go bowling with them. And the moment you finish bowling, like someone else would have wanted to meet up with you, and all the way to the other side of the hotel to go hang out with them at the craps table or whatever. And it, like, I kind of came to the conclusion that I'm not going to be doing the running anymore. I'm going to go where I want, and if someone wants to meet up, I'll just plant myself somewhere and be like, "Hey, I'm here. You do the running."
That's pretty much what I do. I either go there and plant, or I'll go like sit somewhere for a while and talk to them. And if someone wants to join, great. But I don't run around either. I fuck that noise. I'm getting too old for that shit.
For me, the games corners are, if I'm kind of tired or if I'm exhausted, I just go there to calm down. Like to socialize, to if I'm not in the mood to do any big thing, and it's a nice place to chill.
So long as it's not the video games corner, like so long as you have like the sit down tabletop, you know, D&D campaigns going kind of thing corner, because those are usually not as loud. But if you go into the games room where like all of like the Smash Bros are going and like all of these other games are going, it's loud and you can't even think.
That reminds me, NFC, the Nordic FastCon, the second biggest European con, I think, by
I'm
now.
I'm familiar with it.
Has an arcade, like with legit arcade stuff in it, like Flipper. Is it Flipper? Called Flipper in? Give me a second. I forgot. Pinball is the English word for it. And pinball is so much fun if you can play it for free.
I used to be an absolute pinball wizard when I was like a 10, 12-year-old kid. Like, yeah. I loved pinball. I think
my first
proper video games was Kirby's Pinball Land.
Hey, I had this one too. And I had Pokemon Pinball.
Aw, that was a fun one.
Yeah, it vibrated. It had a rumble pack.
No, my.
On the Game Boy. And also, another game I saw on a furry con that was played on a furry con, and it's a super rare game. It's like if people talk about games you can't get easily, it's this one, and I think you're really excited about this one, Core.
Okay.
Maybe you even know it. It comes up, and Evolution is the name. Evolution.
Evolution?
Yes, you have a dinosaur race, and you need to go through evolution with it and add different skills to them, and who has the best race in the end, the best animal practically wins. I don't know the rules exactly anymore, but I had fun of it. I had so much fun with it. Yeah, because it's super rare. You get it? I think at least the original edition, you get on eBay for like 700.
Jesus!
Yes, it's so rare. It's so... they stopped producing it for some reason. I really don't know what exactly the reason is, but...
it's a 2014 game, so like, it came out and then it just stopped?
Yes. Kind of.
Did it not sell well in the beginning, so people just... did you stop making it real
I
quick?
I can order it from the manufacturer for $40.
Maybe it came back.
I'm seeing there is a first edition. Let me see here. One sec. Yeah, so like there's a first edition that you can get by the same makers.
Yeah, that's discontinued.
Yeah, discontinued, but you can still get it for like $52 on Amazon. Huh.
Maybe it's a very, very special rare edition. I don't have an idea, but it is really, really expensive.
I'm going to get this game because this looks really fun.
Yeah, do that. And the first edition should be, it's really good, people say. But you get it super expensive. That's the problem.
Yeah. Weird. Okay.
Yes, because sometimes first editions have quirks or mistakes that they end up catching and fixing in later versions of the game, so they can become extremely collectible for that reason.
Do we want to move on to questions?
Yeah, sure. Unless
before we are going to questions, I have a quiz for you.
Oh no.
It's only two questions because and it was sent
it's
to
been
me by...
so long. I thought we got away. I thought we escaped.
No, we are not over it yet. I was just had no time to do them in the past, as I would give them to you each episode. But yeah, actually those questions were given to me by Eclipse, who is a board game nerd.
So
the first question is, and you can both answer it at the same time, as it's unfair, I think. What famous spy was named after an American ornithologist? So first of all, a bird-related question. Yes. And the possible answers are A, James Bond, B, Ethan Hunt, or C, Jason Bourne.
Which one was named after an American
ornithologist, yes.
I'm going to guess number three, just because. Why not?
You say Jason Bourne.
I'm kind of on board with Bourne as well. Let's do Bourne.
Nobody of you gets a point because it was actually James Bond.
Really?
James Bond is, okay. Yeah.
An ornithologist.
Yeah, yes, a bird scientist.
I know what an ornithologist is, Fleeks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Fleeks.
Anyways, okay, next question. I'm going to have to look that up.
And yeah, already the last question, and this is board game related. What American nursery rhyme featuring a bird had its own board game created in 1890? A. Sing a song of sixpence. B. Birds and letters. Or C. Goosey Goosey Gander.
What do you think about this, Cor? Because I picked the last one.
Bring the question around one more time.
What American nursery rhyme featuring a bird had its own board game created in 1890?
Okay. In 1890. Holy cow.
A. Sing a song of sixpence. B. Birds and letters. C. Goosey Goosey Gander.
I legit don't know, actually, so I'm going to go with B.
Birds and letters?
Yeah, sure, what the hell. I'll second.
What are you going with, Storm?
I'm going to second Core, because I don't know American nursery rhymes from 1890. It's not like we still sing them sons of bitches today. I mean, for fuck's sake. Good Lord, please.
Storm... You should have stick with C because C is right. Goosey Goosey Gander. And Birds and Letters.
I had a feeling.
Birds and Letters was totally made up by myself. And it's actually the reference is Snakes and Letters.
Yeah, I kind of figured.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I hope you're feeling proud, Eclipse, because nobody could handle your hard question.
You win.
You wins. Yeah, he was the only winner of this game.
He defaults.
Yeah, that was our tiny short quiz. Thanks for...
This is all the pain of a normal quiz compressed into a small amount.
Yes.
That's right. So our listeners submitted a couple of stories. And... I was wondering if you two would like to hear them.
Okay.
Well, okay, the first... It's not a question. It's a couple of stories from their experiences.
Oh, okay.
Playing a game. Okay. So the first story comes from Sable Dracon, and the story is... Back in 2007, I was part of a group with friends from high school work and job corps. It was a four-man plus RDM, myself, Valen, Noobstick, Nick, and Soviet, the DM. The game was a modified of D&D 3.5 for a bit more cinematic experience. Oh, that's always fun. Soviet had us chasing after sky pirates for the last session and a half, and was getting to the climax for the narrative arc. We were sneaking through the island, mountain base, and some big tunnel complex when we get to the main character. Noobstick, with his rogue, starts sneaking in, scouting things out. Valen gets bored of this after a few rounds and grabs a round glass flask of orange liquid. This is the important bit, as a few sessions before, we came across a trove of alchemical goodies. I guess chemicals, like pharmaceutical goodies.
Alchemy?
Yeah, so yeah, something alchemic.
Yeah,
alchemic. There we go. We'll go with that. Alchemic goodies. One of which was a liquefied version of the spell Cloud Kill. So Valen throws this grenade into the room. We figure Noobstick is going to die horribly and be forced to roll something other than a fucking rogue. 1-4 save later, we still have a rogue. Then we hear Soviet rolling a lot. D20's like a motherfucker rolling behind that screen. 5 minutes later, Soviet looks to... Yeah, 5 minutes later... This is how D&D goes, always. 5 minutes later, Soviet looks dejected and just says, fuck, take five guys. I need a blunt and some time to rebuild the campaign. You fucks killed every damned pirate and my chase scene I had planned. We all just broke out laughing, ordered some local delivery pizza, and played Guitar Hero until Soviet figured out what he wanted to do with the story. A word to necessity DMs out there. Never forget what your party has in inventory and be careful what you give them. They will unexpectedly fuck up your story with it by using it in unexpected ways. And that is the story. That's the story of being a DM, just truly.
Nice.
You never know what your players are going to do.
Oh, God.
So,
I'm sorry I totally fucked up reading that, but I was trying not to laugh the whole time I read it. That's what made it such a
damn pretty amazing. Trend. Like, you just ruined your DM's day for sure.
I really would like to play a pen and paper one day, really. That's
so I heard so many amazing stories a few years ago. I had so it was actually relatively early on in the game, and mm-hmm. there were four players, and they were kind of like in these Lost Woods-esque area. And they finally stumble across this town after they've been battling slimes and rats and just like a whole bunch of like low level shit, but they've been slowly pinging them to the point that they were kind of like, we need health. So we got them into a town, and they're in the potion shop, they're buying potions. And I also just kind of offhand mention, so you see, you know, your health, your mana potions, you also see a Pokeball, and then you see da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, wait, Pokeball? I'm like, yeah, there's a Pokeball up there. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I'll buy the Pokeball. Really? It's 500 gold. Shoot, we only have, like, among us, like, 300 gold. So, like, they kind of went out, battled, and then they bought the Pokeball for 500 gold. And 7 hours later into the game, this is like 2 days later that we were doing this, he still has the Pokeball in his inventory, and they're wandering through some more Lost Woods. And I just mentioned that a Weedle falls out of a tree in front of them. They're like, wait, a Weedle? What's a Weedle? Like, I haven't heard of that. I'm like, yeah, you have. Think about it for a second. Oh, yeah, the Pokemon. Okay. He's like, oh, I have the Pokeball. We can catch a Weedle, guys. Let's do it. Like, yeah, let's catch the Weedle. So they throw the Pokeball at the Weedle. It bounces off with no effect. And like, wait, so why the Weedle's not even like getting captured or anything? He's like, no, not at all. So he's like, okay, I'll go pick up the Pokeball. And he goes to pick up the Pokeball. And I say, okay, as you grab the Pokeball, a foot steps on your hand and crushes the Pokeball underneath your hand. You look up and you see Gary motherfucking Oak. And he's pissed that you tried to catch his Weedle. So then they had to fight a boss battle, which was Gary Oak throwing six Pokemon at him.
I love that you can.
I just hybridized it and threw that in there for fun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's actually another story I heard from a friend, and they played practically, they found a cursed panty.
Cursed.
Yeah, cursed. And its effect was actually to let your genitals grow in a way that you can pull it off again. That was the intended effect. Like put some choke in, you know what I mean? Because somebody's stupid enough to put the panties on, right?
But what if they put them on their head?
Exactly, that's what happened. And they put it on their head, and then their nose grew. And they couldn't get it off again. So they lost a lot of charisma. They lost a lot of charisma.
I love it.
My true Storm Griffin fashion, this is the highlight of my D&D experiences, okay? So playing D&D with some friends, we're at the house, and the DM decides he's gonna be interesting. And decides to cast a love potion in the game to throw off my character and this princess witch character thing from finding the treasure we were looking for that would have allowed us to move on to the next part of the story arc.
Okay.
And the DM went so far into the detail of this scene that the entire group of us got completely sidetracked and ended up having an orgy.
That sounds like an indie campaign with you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. That actually did happen. It was awesome. And the only person not participating in the orgy was the DM, who literally had his hand over his face the entire time.
I don't doubt.
But yeah, love stories are a thing in DM. I mean, you often have like characters that are falling in love with some of your other party members. Like I know there was one party where one of the members, I think it was an elf or something, and it was falling in love with a gnoll. And the gnoll wasn't falling in love with this elf and was really annoyed. Yes.
I'd probably also fall in love with a kobold too.
Or what's the bird race in D&D? I forgot.
Good question. It's been years since I've played.
Yeah, we should play D&D in one of our episodes or multiple of our episodes.
Just have a background D&D campaign. We're sitting here talking, taking listener questions. Oh, and Storm, you did 7 damage to that orc. Congratulations. It swings its hammer at you and you go flying across the room.
Listeners, let us know if you want us to have an Dungeons & Dragons campaign live on this, not live, but on the show. Or maybe we could use Twitch to play live, actually.
Okay. Yes. Well, I did post one final story in the it's not that long.
Microphone here. Okay. Hashtag bird stories. In a D&D 3.5e game I was in, I ruined monks for the DM to the point that they flat banned them as a class. I got separated from the group in a maze and encountered a mind flayer. We traded blows for a bit until I was getting so low on health. There was a door behind the mind flayer, so I succeeded in a tumble check to roll through the door, roll through its legs, and quickly open and dash through the door. I slammed it shut behind me, locked it, and found myself in a room with just a chest. Fortunately for me, the chest was full of healing potions. I downed a few, but saved some for the party. The mind flayer had been pounding on the door this whole time, so I made a quick check to quickly unlock the door and slam it into the creature. I rolled high enough that it not only hit the mind flayer, but sent it sprawling prone about 15 feet away. I quickly hopped over to it and punched it to death while it was down. And that's how that's the story of how I took on and endured a mind flayer solo.
Impressive. That's a way to defeat a mind flayer.
With a door. To the face.
Oh, Never underestimate the power of people just using doors. Yeah, why the hell not?
Yeah, there are multiple ways. Like you can, if you're lucky. Okay, the last story I also had from a friend. So they for some reason one of their spells made a whole whole meadow like glow in light because they failed a spell or something, and Pretty. Then the whole area was glowing. And then there was like level 100, like a super strong wizard was coming to them and was like asking, what's going on here? What's going on here? And that they would have never defeated them. They would have attacked them if they wouldn't have retreated to a lie. And they told him the lie and just said nothing. Yeah, nothing is going on. And they diced high enough that he was just saying then, oh, okay, there's nothing going on. Okay, and then he went away. That's what you can do in D&D games. Like if the dice is high.
If you roll a perfect 20, anything can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was glowing. Everything was super obvious that there was something. And then you're lying like, oh, nothing, there's nothing. And then he's just like, oh, okay. And goes away. A mighty wizard. A mighty fucking wizard. I would so enjoy to play with you one day and have hilarious moments like this.
That's the problem, though, is D&D takes, like, it takes days to get through a campaign. And I understand that, like, there's this new version that came out, I think, what, the 5.0 edition? That really does tone it down quite a bit. But even then, it's still like you're going to be spending the whole day working on a campaign.
What I like the most is not necessarily the playing the right system and anything. It's the story building that fascinates me the most, like doing silly stuff and telling a story in total.
Yeah, and I know of a dungeon master right now that is running a campaign that's been running for 20 years. So it can go on for as long as the DM is willing to keep adding to the story and changing the goal. And
or dies of cardiac arrest.
Are they using a grenade in an alchemy laboratory?
Oh, yes, Fleeks. Or they're doing that. So, as for our questions, the first one comes from Reg Day. Beautiful, glorious Reg Day with his most wonderful musical talents. Reg Day asks, what would the board squares be labeled as? And what player objects would be used if there was a Burdanian version of Monopoly? Oh, this ought to be
good. That's a long to say, but there has to be names of famous birds on it. Like the Donald Duck Street and the quack alley, Alfred from Quack alley.
Naturally the dungeon would be renamed Storm's Nest, because it's where the party's at. So when you go to jail, you come to my nest and I do bad things to you. It's, after all, it's where the party's at.
And yeah, core. Name a Monopoly Street bird like.
What? Okay, I'm on the spot, so everything's coming up blank. I'm sorry. Raven's Lane. Let's just do that.
Raven's Lane.
How about Chirpalicious Boulevard? Come on.
Yeah, that would be the street you would live on, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely. I would live on the corner of Chirpalicious Boulevard and Griffin Way.
Oh, how's the mascot of Fruit Loops called again?
Mascot of Fruit Loops? I don't. Toucan Sam?
Yeah, of course you need the Toucan Sam Road.
Toucan? Hey, I could see it. I could see it.
Okay. Condor Boulevard.
The Condor. Yeah.
Eagle's Landing, you know? There you go.
Eagle's Landing yeah. Doesn't sound bad. And
what would the currency be?
Millet. You would collect millet, and yeah, you actually Bitcoin. the board game actually has just a package of millet added to it, and you have to weight it in grams. Like
the thing is it's real millet that they bring with the package, so it's like fresh and everything, and it's really difficult not to just eat the millet when you open the package.
Yes, and that makes the game
that makes
the game even more difficult because you have to watch out not to eat your own money.
Oh God! Oh, we're going to hell. Oh jeez.
The Woodpecker edition has grub, so living grub.
Okay.
That somehow don't eat their way out of the box.
Somehow, well, they're in a solid metal container with just enough food to last to the next game. Somehow,
and they never never evolve.
Exactly. Peter Corkley asks, "Can we get a bird version of Settlers of Catan?"
That'd be what? Settlers of the Sky?
Settlers of the Sky. Yeah, where we are.
Settlers of.
And it's played with clouds and
Etheria? I don't know. What was the name of like a famous cloud city?
The one in thing of Deponia. The one of Deponia, how is it called? I forgot it.
Anyways. So Settlers of Clouds. And the catch is the clouds actually kind of move around a little bit, like so if you're trying to get to one area to another, by the time you get to that cloud, you'd have fought wind currents and, you know, debris flying through the air. And your cloud that you were trying to get to may have moved and cost you an extra turn to get to it.
Mm. Oh, my God. Eclipse sent Birdopoly. It exists.
Yes, it exists. I want to play it, kind of.
Oh, my God. This looks amazing. Anyways, resuming normal programming.
And I see also in that there's Evolution Flight, which is the expansion for the game Evolution we were talking about.
Yes.
I wonder what Flock is.
And a game called Flock.
I'm going to look that up while you guys take on the next question.
Feedy actually submits two things. Feedy actually has a very short story, which I'll read. Once we played a match of Munchkin, and I flipped tables and objects through the game room. I laughed so hard that I sneezed and fell from my chair on my drums and accidentally created a nice beat.
Aw, he performed a storm.
Oh, fuck you, Cor. Fuck you.
But with drums. The storm.
Yes.
Like falling from your chair is one thing, but falling into a set of drums is, well, he won up to you. You need to come up with something better.
Two drums and a cymbal fall off cliff.
yeah. Storm needs to fall off a cliff next time.
Ah,
well, what the fuck?
I riff on him, but I'm not okay. Like wishing for him to go kill himself. Jesus, Fleeks.
He has wings. Damn it.
Ouch. Why do you hate me so much? Anyways,
down this cliff you have a lot of mattresses.
Oh, like, well, that's good. I can just go down with.
Okay.
If you go through
yourself off a cliff for us.
Yeah. If we were sponsored by a mattress company, that would be the perfect time to plug it. But we are not sponsored by a mattress.
Griffin's falling from the sky. Only at Mattress Giant. Ooh, ka. Jeez. Peter Corkley also asks, is Raptor Jesus the messiah of all birds, just birds of prey, or just dinosaurs?
I think he's the messiah of all living things.
Yes,
Raptor Jesus is the messiah of us all.
We all have Raptor Jesus in our hearts.
Raptor Jesus.
Also, Raptor Jesus is a pretty sexy messias to have.
Mm. So, Sparhawk, I'm Samir. Oh God, I totally fucked that up. I'm sorry, Sparhawk. What fandom is in most need of additional birds.
All fandoms.
Every single one.
Yes.
I don't understand the nature of the question.
Especially the bird-hating fandom.
I know. Are you ready? Scientology. The Scientology fandom.
I'm sure they have birds. I'm so sure. They probably somewhere in their religion they have birds.
The oceanic fandom needs more birds. Water birds.
I'm sure if Tom Cruise was a bird, Scientology would be all over that. Just saying.
Yeah, if you say so.
I don't think it's like how religions work, that if you have a famous, actually the famous people plug your religion, not the religion, the famous person. I think like just imagine there's a famous Christian actor and they wouldn't integrate them in their religion. Actually, I think it's just a theory.
Moriar asks, is there a reason we don't talk about where all the owls went?
Next question.
We are not talking about where the owls went.
He also asks, do griffins get invited to cloaca parties? Absolutely. Oh. We put our hole. If you have a hole, we have a pole. That's how this works.
Aris is invited, yeah, because obvious reasons, but...
Oh, I'm not invited? Fleeks, are you telling me I'm not invited?
No cloaca, no party.
Yeah, I mean, you did just say that, yep.
Mm-mm. No. I'm crashing that.
All right, next question.
How much radion is acceptable for a party in the basement? Oh my god. How much radon? I believe the answer would be none or as little as possible, because that stuff can fuck you up.
Well, if it's used for the lighting, it's okay. Then you can have a lot of radon pipes. But you shouldn't. I mean, I think bird radiation pretty much nullifies radon radiation.
Honestly, so you need at least 4 radon or more to have a real party.
Yeah.
And make sure that party is in your basement.
That. Yes, where the owls are.
Hey, my party's behind my loincloth. Just letting you know.
So for people who don't know, radon is a colorless, odorless, noble gas that is radioactive. And it can give you lung cancer. So, yeah.
Which is why when you buy a home with a basement, get it tested.
But yeah, you need to have a radon detector.
You forgot something. You forgot something. It's also a noble gas. So
I said noble gas.
It can't be. You said it?
Yes.
But you have to emphasize it. So, because... Because
it's
I
noble.
It,
it's nobility.
Yeah.
So... Teonost asks, when does a party theme go too far?
When you have 4 or more radon in your basement and you're having a party in your basement.
Yeah, and a party theme goes too far as soon as your party theme is radioactive fursuits or something like that. Like,
so,
don't.
The moral when of the ratio... episode is don't have radon parties.
And the ratio of dragons to griffins exceeds more than 1:1, that is when the party has gone too
if
far.
You have
we got to keep the dragons in check.
You have one too many dragons at your party.
Exactly.
And don't do an end of the world party that ends with cups of Kool-Aid. That's also not a good way to party.
Oh, God, Fleeks. Jeez. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Fleeks is trying to take you with him to the next life.
I just said no to that, yeah.
Say no to party Kool-Aid. Got it.
Say no to the last parties.
Yeah.
Last question is from Moriar, and the question is, in a fight, is it dignified to go for another bird's tail?
Is this a fight for your life or like brawl like competition thing.
I actually don't see any purpose.
Life. You do what you gotta do.
But I don't see a purpose in getting rid of a tail of whoever you're fighting to survive.
If you manage to pluck a few feathers out of their tail, it makes it really hard for them to navigate and chase you.
I mean, if you fight a lizard, maybe because they're losing the balance, then that's maybe a good tactic.
But if you do it with another bird, they then don't have their tail wings to help keep them going in the direction they want.
Oh yeah, that's a good argument. So if it brings you a tactical advantage, and then it's okay. But if you do it only to cut the tail, that you shouldn't do that, except maybe for secretaries.
All right. Well,
I personally think that if it's a fight for your life, everything is fair game. If it's a boxing match or a fight for fun,
then there's rules.
Yes.
Tail feathers, no, it's required.
I mean, if he means it like grabbing the tail, that's probably okay in bird wrestling, like swinging them around, like. Like, but Bowser was grabbed by the tail by Mario, and it was a very
undignified fight full of honor.
Yes.
I mean, Bowser had it coming, but
But Bowser put the bombs there.
It's true. Why? Yeah. Why did he put the bombs there in the first place?
Exactly, because
was he
because
planning on throwing Mario into a bomb? He does, because he does pick you up, walk you over to the edge, and tries to throw you off the edge. And sometimes he walks you over to a bomb. So his intention is actually to throw you into a bomb. So never mind.
I thought because it's the only way to defeat him, he just wanted to give you a fair chance. He isn't that bad of a guy. I mean, they play tennis together. They play tennis together sometimes. And they play football together and basketball and stuff. They even have parties together.
They throw parties together, yeah.
Yes. So yeah. He isn't that bad of a guy. I think they have some kind of role play going on with the Peach thing, and you know,
keeps her hyped and keeps her excited.
Yeah.
Well, all right, this is getting a little weird.
Okay, then this has been a very interesting episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we ready to wrap up, or do we have anything else we want to say?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we're about ready.
Awesome. Okay. Well, guys, thank you once again so much for joining us. If you want to help support the show, you can help us out on Patreon, patreon.com/birdlifepodcast. Or, well, you can always subscribe to us on the RSS feed as well, or via Apple Music, Apple Podcasts. God, I am not with it in the brain today. I'm sorry. Or Google Play Music. Yeah.
Yes, and I am doing a podcast on YouTube with Adler the Eagle. It's called Coin Draw, and we are drawing while we are calling, practically. And it would be fun to have you there as a viewer and giving us input and stuff.
We'll throw a link in the...
Give it a chance.
Yeah, we'll throw a link to the channel in the show notes, as well as hype it a couple times in the actual... Bird Life Chat. You can also join us on Bird Life Chat, Telegram at Bird Life. BURDLIFE.
You mean slash?
No, just at, because you go to the. Well, maybe just slash.
Oh, yeah. You can also make the t.me/birdlife.
Yes. All right, thank
it's,
you.
It's, li- it's linked, linked on our page, anyways.
Fair enough. All right, thank you. And remember, always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
Stay beeping, my chirpy friends.
Coin Draw will be practically a podcast where we are also drawing, so it's practically a vodcast or a drawcast. I don't know. It will be same thing. It will be on YouTube.
Yep.
So now that I plugged it, Storm, what's our topic today, or do we want to talk about other stuff first?
Well, now that you've given your obligatory caught and draw advertisement for the day.
I will.
Don't forget, at the end of the show, you're gonna owe us some advertisement fees for that plug.
Maybe we should set up a plug section. People can advertise something for like $5.
Yes, I think that would be fun. And then we're allowed to advertise it any way we want.
Yeah, they write us something that we can read within 30 seconds, and then just $5 for that shout out. We read exactly what they want, but we read it how we want to read it.
And if you want a specific host to read it, I'm not saying the others can't pipe in. You can specify. Of course, if you want me to read it, you gotta chimp in $6 instead of $5.
And if you want to have,
I'll lowball that $4 if you want me to read something.
If you want to have it read in a German accent, then you have to pay with euro, of course.
Good stuff.
But you do get the benefit of, you know, the sexy German accent reading it.
Right. Goodwill and charities. Just
who
my bedroom.
Who is clipping their toenails?
Not me.
Is nobody else hearing that?
No.
I heard it. And you heard it, right?
Well, I heard a noise, but I didn't know if it was toenail clipping. I don't know what the hell it was.
There's like somebody barging in on our call and just clipping their toenails at us.
I did not do anything really productive. That's a pen.
No, that's a toenail clipper. It's just not actually clipping anything. There you go. Yeah, now
I'm squeezing my toenail clipper now, and you can't hear anything because
our first merch. Our first merch out of the Bird Life store is going to be Bird Life toenail clippers.
No, we gotta call them talon trimmers.
Yes,
I don't have talons because I'm not a bird of prey.
Beak trimmers, then.